Good morning. This meeting of House Fisheries Committee will come to order at 10:02 a.m. in room 120. Today is Tuesday, March 7th, 2017. Please remember to turn your cell phones off or silence them, one or the other. Our members present are Representative Newman, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Fansler, myself, Chair Stutes, and Representative Tarr will be about 10 or 15 minutes late. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. We are also joined by Kelly Burnett from House Records. Welcome, Kelly. And Somers Cole from the LIO, and naturally, my committee aide, Reed Harris. Today we have two bills on the agenda. House Bill 76, Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund, and House Bill 128, Shellfish Enhancement Projects and Hatcheries. Oh, and welcome. We have Representative Eastman joining us. We have a draft proposed committee substitute, version R. Members, you have that in your packet, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS as a working document. Representative Fansler.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept the committee substitute for House Bill 76. That's 30-LS0343R as the working document.
Thank you.
Object now, for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. And if I could have Representative Ortiz and Elizabeth speak to the changes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Do we have a sheet that explains the differences, a separate sheet? Matter of fact.
Is it the
back on your desk, sir? Right. Did you get one of these packets on your desk, Representative Newman?
I'm sure I did, as long as we're on the same page.
Okay. Thank you. Proceed, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Representative Dan Ortiz. I represent District 36, Southern Southeast Alaska. And with me today is Elizabeth Bowling, and she will put herself on the record as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Elizabeth Bowling. I'm staff to Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today House Bill 76. Before I start talking about House Bill 76, Madam Chair, I'd like to give a little bit of background. In these days, we're all aware that economic diversification is going to be a necessity for the state to move forward, to help get the state back on the road to a sound economy, for a sound overall economic environment for the state. We need to diversify. We need to find ways to make us less dependent on a one-engine economy. And I think we're all in agreement with that basic understanding. With that said, Madam Chair, the seafood industry, there's an opportunity there in the seafood industry with mariculture development.
Excuse me one moment while I recognize Representative Chenault has joined us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mariculture development, Madam Chair, there's some real prospects there for our economy to diversify and to expand the already existing important seafood industry. I remind members of this committee that Senator Sullivan, in his address, talked about the importance of the seafood industry to the overall economy of Alaska. Talked about it as a $6 billion a year industry, talked about the seafood industry as being the largest private employer of folks in Alaska at this time, and so it's already a key driver to the economy. The seafood industry is critical to our economy. House Bill 76, Madam Chair, is a bill that helps to provide growth and provide opportunity in an evolving part of that, potential evolving part of that economy, in the mariculture industry. So what House Bill 76 does, Madam Chair, it amends the existing Alaska Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund to allow up to 40% of the fund to be used for loans to permitted shellfish hatcheries for planning, construction, and operation. Alaska shellfish farms currently do not have a stable supply of seed for the propagation of oysters and no regular in-state source of seed for resident aquatic plants and other shellfish. A stable supply of seed is one of the many hurdles the industry must overcome to grow and become viable. I'll remind everybody on the committee that the governor has recently appointed a task force totally designed to try to find ways to get this industry, this mariculture industry, up and going. So he has appointed a mariculture, statewide mariculture task force to help see this happen. This bill, Madam Chair, will amend the program to change its focus and eligibility from individual mariculture farmers to include shellfish hatcheries that would market stock to local mariculture farmers. The bill is necessary for this burgeoning industry, as the mariculture industry in Alaska is not yet fully developed and is, because it has no history, is considered a high risk from a financial standpoint, making private financing difficult to obtain. So what this bill would do would make it more likely, more able for people who are interested in developing shellfish hatcheries, developing seed, those kinds of things, organizations that do that, which is critical. It's critical to get the mariculture industry going. So I'm in full support of this bill, Madam Chair. I see it as a good thing. It's just a step in the process of trying to develop our overall mariculture industry. And with that said, I'm going to leave the room here and go up to finance, but Elizabeth Bowling will take you through a sectional analysis of the bill itself. But
including
with that,
are
there any primary questions or any initial questions that I might answer at this
time? Are there any questions from this committee for Representative Ortiz prior to his departure? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Only because there's a substantial amount of money in the changes that are made on the total outstanding that the borrower can take, and because it's a large number, I thought maybe it would be good for Representative Ortiz to maybe explain that. I see in the loan we're looking on page 4, where the applicants can, they used to be, but I'm looking on page 4, line 2, $100,000 a year for an applicant, and now it extends it out to $1 million a year for those applicants. And then I go down to line 21 for a borrow in these loans, which goes from $300,000 to $1 million. And that's a lot of money to go out on these loans. You know, I'm assuming that these loans also have to be disapproved by a financial institution, so they're non-competitive to them. And how this all affects the fund, how the fund has been managed for funds, but can they sustain $1 million grants and still have enough available to anybody who wants them? So that's a big issue there, Representative, and if you can maybe explain why the purpose was for that.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, thank you for that question. Representative Newman, I think, first of all, we have Brittany Choney Haywood from the department who can further explain how or, you know, explain the sustainability of this particular fund based on these increases that we're talking about. But with that said, the existing revolving loan fund up to this point has only had one recipient of an actual loan based on this fund. And what this bill does is it expands the opportunity, creates more players in the game that might potentially source this particular fund, because the fund is underutilized at this point. And I think you would agree that if we have capital sitting there for the purposes of utilization to help develop the economy, we want to see those funds utilized. We want to see those funds utilized. Otherwise, they're not doing any good, not helping to develop the economy in any way. With that said, obviously, it's important that the funds remain solid, that they remain sustainable, and I believe that it expands it up to 40% of the money can be obtained through this particular facet or through this particular new outlet. And the remaining 60% stays there. So I think that, you know, although Ms. Choni Haywood will be able to explain more in more detail about why this fund will remain stable and why it, you know, the projections are that it'll be solid, I think in general what this bill does is it makes it open to a wider variety of players that hopefully will do a better job of utilizing the resources that are there. Otherwise, if they just sit there, they're not doing anybody any good.
I understand that, Madam Chair. I just wanted to hear from the Chair why, you know, going up to $1 million is that, and I wanted to get
Thank
that
you.
On record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is this for Representative Ortiz?
I think the question can go to either. And so if just basically how underutilized is this fund through the Chair?
And Madam Chair, I will defer to Ms. Haywood on this, and I will ask for your indulgence to leave at this point and leave it to the solid hands of Elizabeth here, who can further explain and answer the questions along with Ms. Haywood. So thank you.
Representative Eastman, are you still objecting? Would you like to remove your objection?
For purpose of discussion, so I guess this is still discussion, or?
We're going to the bill. That was for the CS.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what this is all about and understand all the differences.
Brief at ease. Ms. Bowling, why don't you walk us through the changes on the that are involved in the CS, and then we can ask Representative Eastman if he still has an objection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 1, the first change that we made to this bill was to create a declaration of policy for the fund. There is currently no declaration of policy in statute for this fund. We wanted to remain consistent with the Fisheries Enhancement Fund, which also has a declaration of policy. This policy is important because it gives clear direction to the department. It protects them in this risky developing environment. And it also protects Alaskans, the beneficiaries of this program. Section 2 links to new definitions, including the new policy and then the definition of shellfish enhancement projects at the end of this bill that was not defined in the original version. Section 3, AS 1610-905-1A, also incorporates the declaration of policy and new definitions. 1B ensures the fund covers marine aquatic plants rather than all aquatic plants, because this is just mariculture. C changes the eligible applicants to include organizations that are actively pursuing shellfish enhancement projects. Enhancement in this scenario only refers to the enhancement of resources rather than the enhancement of individual organisms. 4B incorporates a new declaration of policy, includes the new definitions. 7 also includes the new declaration of policy, new definitions. AS 1610-905-9 allows the department to make grants only to nonprofit organizations that are eligible for loans under 910A2 for organizational and planning purposes that provide for public uses in this developing industry. This is consistent with the Fisheries Enhancement Fund. Section 4 incorporates the declaration of policy, new definitions. A2 expands eligible applicants to include a resident of the state or an entity organized under the laws of the state that holds a permit under 1640-100 to operate a hatchery for the purpose of producing aquatic plants or shellfish for sale, or is authorized to operate shellfish enhancement projects that may not be for sale. Section 6, 915A, will incorporate the declaration of policy and new definitions. 2, A and B, clarifies different categories of loan applicants and their terms. This gives an additional length of time to eligible loan applicants under Category 2 for the same purposes of public uses I aforementioned, and these terms are consistent with those terms under the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund. And then 4 allows the department to consider additional collateral sources, including voluntary assessments, which may be agreed to in AS 1610-923. And Brittany Cioni-Haywood, the division director for the department, can speak further to this particular piece. Section 7 incorporates the declaration of policy and the new definitions. And Section 9, D, incorporates the new declaration of policy and new definitions. As you can see, that was very necessary all throughout the bill. Section 10 adds a new subsection, F, which clarifies loans to a hatchery or an enhancement project. And it clarifies that in order to receive a loan, these enhancement projects or hatcheries must contribute to a common property fishery or otherwise the public interest. So the program operates in a manner beneficial to the public interest and will be managed in a manner that protects the fund. This is another reason why the policy declaration at the beginning is so important and why we added it to the CS. Section 11, A and B, these two were edited to mirror the initial loan period from the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund, and it allows flexibility for farmers, especially in this risky developing industry. Section 12A creates a mechanism through which organizations comprising more than one stakeholder can arrange to pay their loan through a voluntary assessment similar to the Salmon Enhancement Program. If you're familiar with SARDFA, SARDFA has a mechanism for levying and collecting an assessment that we suggest this program emulate. And then in B, it protects the department by ensuring only organizations with a plan and an agreement to collect an assessment to pay the loan may receive the loan. This does not preclude the department from accepting other mechanisms that are satisfactory to the department. And then in Section 13, this allows the department to dispose of property acquired after default. Thank you.
What about,
thank you.
Through the chair, Section 14?
Representative Friesman?
Yeah.
Please.
Thank you very much. Section 14, what was going on in Section 14?
The change in Section 14 is the definition of a shellfish enhancement project, which is a project to augment the yield or harvest of shellfish above naturally occurring levels using a natural, artificial, or semi-artificial productive system, or rehabilitate a shellfish stock by restoring it to its naturally occurring levels of productivity. That's the only change to Section 14.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions, Representative?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you go over the changes on 12 and 13 again?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, would you like me to give an example for Section 12?
I believe you said something about it. It changes the way that you agree the payments are made.
Oh, I understand. Through the chair, Representative Newman, this section does not preclude other forms of payment on loans. This section allows for organizations with multiple members to levy and collect an assessment to pay their loan. So this is just one mechanism through which an organization can pay.
Madam Chair.
Follow up, Representative.
Madam Chair, so I see also here that they don't have to start making any payments till after 6 years. So can they start collecting payments from somebody before they're making payments back to the state on the loan? That's not clear in the bill.
Madam Chair, may I ask that Brittany Cioni-Haywood of the department join us?
Absolutely. Please come forward, Ms. Haywood. Identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Brittany Choney Haywood. I'm the director for the Division of Economic Development in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Thank you. Did you hear the question that Representative Newman was asking?
I'm sorry. I need it to be repeated, please.
Representative Newman.
Madam Chair, in the bill it states that you can not have to pay back the loan from 6 to 11 years, I believe. Can the department start collecting payment under this changes? Can the department start collecting payment from the people who owe the loan or associations, members of the association? Can they start collecting payment on them before they're paying the state?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, a clarification. So this is in regards to the voluntary assessment. Is that correct? Or
Madam Chair, if I can explain. So what I understand is, according to Section 11, that the initial period determined by the department of a loan for an applicant can vary of not less than 6 years or not more than 11. So I read that to say that they don't have to make any payments for the first 6 years. But I also, again, an association I'm assuming would be individual members that form a group to do this. Can they charge association members a fee before they're making payments to the state? That's not clarified in the bill. And then, Madam Chair, what I see is they're collect these fees. I don't know if the fees would be for the maintenance and operations or how that would go. They're going to have to collect fees for others, but this is about the loans. And so are they going to be paying back the loans, or none of that's clarified in the bill.
Ms. Bowling?
Madam Chair, I believe we're joined by Alpheus Bullard of Legislative Legal, and I believe that he can clarify answers to these questions.
And maybe that should be clarified in the bill.
I don't see him. Mr. Buller?
Thank you.
Oh, he is there.
Did
you hear the question, Mr. Buller?
For the record, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal, and I did hear Representative Newman's question. But the question relates to those associations under Section 12 of the bill. Section 12 provides that such an association may levy and collect an assessment from among its members for the purpose of securing and repaying a loan. So there are no time limitations on when they could begin to collect an assessment, either to secure a loan or to repay a loan.
So in other words,
Representative Newman?
The association can start collecting fees from the association, and they set the fees. There's nothing in statute that talks about the fee payment schedules.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, and for the record, this is Elizabeth Bowling speaking. There's nothing in this CS that would stop an association from collecting and levying an assessment to pay the loan prior to the six-year period. However, I see no reason why an association would not be able to pay their loan early. And if they were to levy and collect an assessment and then not use that funding to pay the loan, I believe that would be illegal.
And I think that's the clarification, Madam Chair. I mean, if members want to do this and get into that, they should probably have it very clear in their mind what they're getting into, because they could be, can they collect fees above beyond what the payments to the state are? You know, and there's nothing in there either in that, the prepayment or early, I don't know how they'd go towards payment. I just think that there's a lot of questions there that I think if an association gets into these loans, we'd probably want to know what's going on.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Eastman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I read it slightly more broadly than that, because it does appear that the assessment can be made prior to a loan even being secured, because it does say for the purpose of securing and repaying a loan. So you could have assessments being collected for an unspecified period of time before the loan's even applied for is how I read the wording here. Maybe a question to our representative from Ledge Legal. Is that correct?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, I
identify yourself, please, for the record.
Forgive me. This is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. These assessments are voluntary from the association members. So whatever the assessment is something that the members have agreed to pay, whether it be for the purpose of securing a loan or repaying a loan or repaying a loan in the future.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Yeah. I had a separate question, another question.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can the owner of these permits, the association owner for these permits, own permits in other states also? And if they could, Madam Chair, is how do they make sure that, so the state wants to help, and I agree with the concept of this bill of expanding more opportunities for jobs. That's my wheelhouse. So I just want to make sure that we're clear there, but my concern is if the state's making loans to help Alaska companies and they're using the same information or process in other areas of America, that we're trying to hold this to Alaskans and there's not enough money to help enough Alaskans out there to start with.
Representative Newman, once we get past this CS, then we'll have a presentation of the bill. So, Representative Eastman, do you still maintain your objection?
Yes, I have a further question about the CS.
On the CS, thank you.
So in Section 10, we have a new subsection here. Is that in the original bill or is that in the CS?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the new section in Section 10, Section F, which is new to this CS, is Section F, which clarifies that loans to a hatchery enhancement project should contribute to a common property fishery or otherwise the public interest. The new Section E is in the original bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions in relation to the CS? Seeing none, Representative Eastman, do you still maintain your objection?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Then we will move on to a presentation of the bill, please. Ms. Bowling.
Madam Chair, you want to move to accept the CS for the record?
Thank you. Seeing no objections, we will be working from the CS.
We already have that motion.
Yeah.
I made that motion.
Oh, very. Anyway, thanks, Ms. Bowling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The intent of this bill and the intent of our additions in the CS is to help our developing mariculture industry, which is currently burdened by the bottleneck of a lack of a year-round in-state seed supply. Per the Department of Fish and Game, native shellfish and marine aquatic plant seed must be produced in the state of Alaska. The only exception is oysters. So there is a bottleneck and an impediment to this new industry, and this bill will help this burgeoning industry. So that's the intent of the bill. And the intent of the CS is really, one, to make the bill more compatible with the terms of the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Fund and to further define relatively new concepts like shellfish enhancement projects.
Thank you. Are there questions from this committee for Ms. Bowling? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bowling, Section 6, there's a considerable increase for an application fee from $100 a year to $1 million a year. that's a pretty big difference. I don't know. And again, and that's the problem I think we have when we have a talk about changes in the CS. That was a big change, but those weren't mentioned in your changes. And those are kind of things that are probably pretty important. I'll just say that for reading it. But then again, it goes from $1 million a year for the applicants. Can you explain how's that going to work?
Representative Newman, you must be referring to the $100,000 a year to $1 million.
Correct.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, thank you for asking about that section. That section presents terms that are consistent with the terms under the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund, and it also gives an additional length of time to eligible loan applicants under Category 2 for the purposes aforementioned public use. So this section was created with the public benefit in mind.
But
follow-up, Representative Newman?
Yeah, that doesn't tell me how you got to $1 million a year for applicants and why $1 million a year is an applicant, a cooperative then that applies for this and they have to put up $1 million bond? Is it $1 million cash that they need to keep in an escrow account? Is it just going to the fund?
Madam Chair, may I invite Ms. Julie Decker of the Mariculture Task Force to speak on behalf of this question?
Please. Ms. Decker?
Madam Chair. Thank you.
Say your name and affiliation for the record.
Julie Decker, Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. Representative Newman, through the chair, I think your question points to the fact that we're trying to change the bill to allow not just individual aquatic farmers to utilize the fund, but also organizations such as Shellfish Hatcheries or other organizations that are trying to implement shellfish enhancement programs. So their need would be a little bit larger than an individual farmer who's sort of trying to enter mariculture as a new activity. That's originally what the intent for the Mariculture Development Loan Fund was, sort of an entry-level way for folks to get started in farming. So we expect the number of entities or organizations to come forward to be smaller number of them, but their need to be a little bit larger for the total dollar amount. So that's the reason to go from $100,000 to potential of $1 million.
Follow-up, Representative Newman?
Sure, my concern is, as it was mentioned, this is to help smaller organizations or individual Alaskans who want to start this, and do they have to come up with $1 million to apply for a loan? Because that's what it says.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I think what they're saying is they could apply for up to $1 million of funds. They'd have to present certain collateral that was acceptable to the department. And that would be, for an example, to support a shellfish hatchery. And the reason, if I could step back maybe a moment, the reason hatcheries are a critical piece of infrastructure for this new industry is farmers right now are struggling even having a secure source of seed. And if they can't purchase seed, they can't grow anything. So hatcheries, shellfish and seaweed hatcheries are very critical. They're like a foundational piece of infrastructure for this industry. But we're at sort of a chicken or egg scenario where the industry is very small, and to actually support that kind of infrastructure, it's very difficult. So this funding mechanism would allow for hatcheries to have sort of a more stable source of funds to get going. And it would also allow for shellfish enhancement projects to get going. For example, some of the folks that have been working on king crab enhancement or sea cucumber enhancement in the state, they're potential entities that may want to utilize the fund.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Eastman.
Yes, I'm curious, through the chair, how large is this burgeoning industry that we're talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the organization I work for, Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, we started pursuing how to help expedite development of this industry about 3 or 4 years ago. And we started with a vision statement saying, grow a $1 billion industry in 30 years. We believe that that's realistic in the state of Alaska. If we get the correct sort of foundation and sort of align some of our assets in the state, we know we don't have money, but we do have these assets like the Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund, that if we align it correctly with where the industry's needs are, we can actually move forward faster. There was an example in, not that Alaska's necessarily going to do this, but in December it was all over the national seafood news that China had moved forward with an agreement to invest $200 million in eastern Russia in an aquaculture project that was for three main species, sea cucumbers, mussels, and scallops. And we have all three of those species in the state of Alaska. So this kind of infrastructure, this kind of development could help us move, you know, along these lines. We also, as I sit on the Mariculture Task Force, and we recognize we want to develop this industry to remain, to keep that reputation the state has of being very responsible for management of our resources. So we don't want to do anything willy-nilly, but we believe really strongly that Fish and Game has those sort of protocols in place to keep everything very sustainable on a sort of a resource management basis.
Follow-up?
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So if we're targeting $1 billion in 30 years, where were we at last year?
$1 million.
Thank you. Are there further questions from this committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How much money is in the current fund, currently in the fund?
Madam Chair, can we invite Ms. Brittany Chody Hayward up?
Absolutely.
So for the record, Brittany Shoney Haywood, give me 1 second here. The current balance available of the fund is $4.5 million that's currently available in the fund.
Thank you.
So it's in
follow up, Representative Newman.
And how's the fund been performing?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I think the fund's been, this is a new fund and funds often take a while to build up. We currently have five loans at about $500,000 in like total principal outs that's been loaned out. So at this point in time, we have not denied a loan for those that have come in to acquire one. This has been obviously under the previous statute, which was for individual farmers.
And Madam Chair, my question is
follow up.
How does the department manage the fund? Do they invest the balance of the fund?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the cash that's kind of on hand is managed by the Treasury Department so that there is interest earned on those funds that go into the general fund. Then we do keep some back for other, like foreclosure and other instances that we reserve back. Yes,
that's kind of where I wanted to get to, Madam Chair, is how the fund is performing and where the performance, the money that's made on how the fund performance goes back to the general fund. Does it go back into the Mariculture Fund?
I'm sorry, through the chair, Representative, if I could do a clarification. The interest and the fees that we acquire goes back into the revolving loan fund. So I just want to clarify, money, like the cash balance that we have, if it's sitting idle, is managed through Treasury to earn some interest on that money. But once we make a loan and put it out there, interest, fees, and other things we collect off of that, that's what allows us to not take general fund and support the division. And then anything that is not used within our operating just remains in that fund so that it revolves and we continue to make new loans out of it.
I understand they're required
Thank
to cover
you.
Their costs out of the fund. And what was the, how much was the
follow up, Representative Newman?
Chair, how much was the original balance of the fund? What was it? How much was it to start with?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it was $5 million.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking because we had the $500,000 out in loans that was the balance of that. So I just want to make sure we were right on that.
Thank you. Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I guess while we're on that section, I was looking at Section 11. Section 11 makes some changes. What What is the current loan rate of the program now? And Madam Chairman, if I could, I'm not sure just exactly where I'm headed yet, but under the current existing program of loans, is there a six-year provision, which is what we're talking about here in Section 11 of no interest payments for the initial 6 years up to 11 years?
Brief at ease.
Thank you so much. Through the chair, Representative
Chenault. Please identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brittany Cioni Haywood with the Division of Economic Development. Through the chair, Representative Chenault. Currently, we are deferring the interest in payments. That doesn't mean that they're, so they just get pushed back. Under this, my understanding is that there would be no interest in payments due during that initial time period.
Follow up, Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, Madam Chairman, so there won't be any payments made for the original 6 years, the first 6 years at a minimum, and possibly up to 11. Earlier it was stated that the assessments were not mandatory, but I'm trying to remember the word you used, that somebody used. And anyway, I'm just curious, and I know this changes to allow for hatcheries, and I agree with the process. I think that it's something that needs to happen. If the assessments aren't mandatory, could you explain to me and maybe the public how the hatchery is going to repay the loan if there aren't mandatory assessments for the individuals that are, you know, I understand that the individual person that is receiving a loan or actually paying that loan back from the product that they develop, but how are the hatcheries going to receive that? You just, somebody could maybe explain that.
Representative Chenault, through the chair, I think I will defer to Julie Decker to answer, if that's okay, please.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Chenault. Some of the components that we're adding here to this bill, we have modeled after the Fisheries Enhancement Revolving Loan Fund, which is specifically for salmon hatcheries. The question of, you know, the repayment period and interest, that is modeled after that. And we tried to break out the difference between 6 years for farmers, which was in the existing loan fund already, but allow additional flexibility for hatcheries or enhancement projects of 6 to 11 years. It models the salmon hatchery program, which we've seen has been successful over time. It allowed for development and growth at a period where things were new. You needed to get stock in the water and see those returns coming back on a consistent basis before you had sort of sources of revenue that you could tap and pay for the fund. For instance, so with salmon, the stakeholders, the permit holders, may have agreed to a voluntary assessment on their fish, but the returns are sometimes take a while to come back. So that's, I think, one of the reasons why you're talking about the difference in timing. The voluntary assessment also, it allows for a type of mechanism, but we're trying to give some flexibility for other types of payment mechanisms that may result, because there's a little slight differences with mariculture hatcheries, shellfish and seaweed hatcheries, because they could be also selling seed to private farmers. So that could be a source of revenue to make the payment. So we're trying to give flexibility to the department to and their fund managers to work with applicants to for the applicants to provide it like a business plan and something that shows, okay, you can meet these payments. That's the intent of the bill. Does that answer your question?
And Madam Chair, just another follow-up. How long has the Mariculture been in existence? How long has that fund been in existence?
This is Brittany Tony Haywood. Through the chair, Representative Chenault, the fund became available in October 2012.
Follow-up, Representative Chenault.
So, Madam Chairman, if it became or online in 2012, then how much of the, maybe you can or can't answer me that, how much of the original, of any of the original loans have been repaid?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, not any at this time. They haven't come due for payment.
Okay, so that's the, Madam Chair, if I may, that's the deferment that you've been talking about. So,
through the chair, yes, that is correct.
And the last, we'll call it 4 years or 5 years, no loan amount has been repaid, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, that is correct, because they're still in the deferment period.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. There, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Section 10, Paragraph E, we talk about the fact that the total balance of outstanding loans cannot exceed 40% of the principal. Now, that principal, is that the $5 million that the fund started off with? What is the principal referring to?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, yes, that would be the $5 million initially. And so the 40% would be the hatchery loans, is my understanding.
Follow-up,
Representative Eastman.
So I'm trying to do some math. So current fund amount and 40% of $5 million. So up to $2 million. Is that what we're saying? Up to $2 million can be covered. So and since we're looking at a loan amounts of up to $1 million, so probably not more than two loans could be offered. Am I doing the math right there?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that would be correct if they took advantage of the loan at the full maximum amount of $1 million. Then that would result in two of the hatchery loans.
Follow-up,
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking here, and I don't know if our Ledge Legal is still available, but page 3, lines 25 to 27 talk about who would be available to qualify as an Alaska resident for purposes of applying for a loan. And I noticed that the lines 22 to 24 reference 24 consecutive months, but lines 25 to 28 don't reference any type of time period. Is there a time period assumed there? Because I don't see it spelled out.
I think, excuse me, Representative Eastman, you may have missed, may not have. So on lines 26 and 27, those are qualifiers.
Yes, they are just qualifiers, but I don't see a time period reference. So if someone, for example, had established residency in another state 10 years ago, is that a disqualifier? Or how do we interpret that?
Representative Fansler.
Sorry, not my interpretation of this through the chair, Representative Eastman, would be it says and may not have, so it would conjoin it to the 24 consecutive months that you would be in there, that you would say shall physically reside in the state, maintaining domicile in the state during the 24 consecutive months preceding the date of the application for the program, and may not have. Allegedly, we can probably hop in and give us a better call.
But thank you.
Reading that would be the 24 consecutive preceding months.
Mr. Bullard, would you concur with that? I can't tell if he's still on. Mr. Bullard? Apparently he's not on.
Can you hear me?
Oh, just barely.
Forgive me, Chair Stutes. I think I was muted. Oh. Your question is about the residency requirements of Section 5?
Correct. I was on, let's see, page...
Page 3.
Page 3 from 22 to 27.
What is, forgive me, once again, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. What is the question?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, so I see here in portion 1 of Section 5, it spells out a 24 consecutive month requirement, and then there's a separate section, number 2, which does not attach a specified time period. And I'm wondering, since they are separate sections, is it necessary to attach the 24 consecutive months to that second section as well?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, I think that if a court were asked to interpret this residency requirement, that they would read paragraph 2 of subsection C to provide that during those 24 consecutive months preceding the date of application that the individual may not have declared or established residency in another state or receive residency or benefit based on residency from another state.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the sake of time, we're going to move forward to public testimony. So I'm going to open public testimony. And we have online Nancy Hillstrand, excuse me, from Homer. Ms. Hillstrand?
Yes.
State your name and your affiliation, and if you could keep your testimony to 2 minutes, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you so much. My name is Nancy Hillstrand. I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. I've been in the fisheries for 40 years and have been watching multiple aspects of it, including enhancement. I've also worked for Fish and Game in salmon hatcheries, so I understand that program pretty well for 21 years. I think with this bill, mariculture needs to be separated out from the other shellfish, because if it is to help some of the clams or oysters or mussels, that needs to be separated out from the rest of the shellfish species. And shellfish needs to be defined in this bill, because it's kind of confusing to people if they just read this bill, I think. So there's also a enhancement program that is for salmon, and that revolving loan needs to be looked into to see how those were paid back and how much is in that fund also, because I know there has been a lot of trouble with paying them back and things like that. And again, I'm concerned about the shellfish pertaining to crab shellfish being inserted into this bill, because that hasn't even happened yet. That's not a burgeoning development program as yet, and it's something that I think we need to be focused more on our natural stocks of fish and seeing why we are having some of the problems we are with our shellfish, such as crab and shrimp, because there are stressors out there that we're maybe not we're not seeing or not adding into this. So I really would say that I'm happy to see that you folks are proceeding with caution on this, because I think there's many moving parts and it needs to be separated out so that you can see that you're either dealing with the mariculture, which is oysters and mussels, things like that, or the other side of it, which is shellfish, meaning crab and shrimp, which is a huge different program than what we're talking about here. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Hillstrand? Seeing none, we will go to Tommy Marsh of Ketchikan.
Hi. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tommy Marsh, and I reside in Ketchikan. I've been involved in the commercial fishing industry for over 35 years, and I've commercially fished my own boat for 27 years. So hopefully you can hear me okay.
We can hear you just fine.
Okay, thank you. I'm currently the president of a volunteer board for Oceans Alaska. We're a nonprofit shellfish hatchery, and we're located in Ketchikan. And as a commercial fisherman and a community member, I think mariculture is really important for economic diversification, enhancements, existing businesses, education, and our fisheries. And hatcheries are really necessary for all of this. This bill is really important for the few hatcheries that do exist in Alaska, like Ocean Alaska, because you know, we've been scraping along, but we've actually been producing more and more seeds. We went from producing 9,000 seeds of oysters to a million, and last year we produced 10 million seeds. But, and I know kind of how this whole thing works, because it really boots on the ground here, is that it's very hard for us to, you know, come up with operating capital. You know, just like salmon processors, we're able to get kind of a pack fund to get going in the spring and help the fishermen get going and kind of pay their bills for the salmon kept coming in. It's kind of the same thing that this bill will help with our hatcheries and for our farmers, because as our farmers have to keep planting seeds every season so that they have a new crop that keeps coming up, it often takes them, you know, 3 to 5 years to realize any income. So we have a hard time, you know, getting our farmers to pay a deposit or a down payment for seeds, because they're kind of just scraping along too. And for us, sometimes we need to carry things for, you know, 6 months and a year before we actually see sales coming in, because we'll buy our seed in the early spring, like we started buying seed in February, and we'll have to set and kind of nurse these things along almost till April or May or June, when the farmers are actually ready to take the seed. And, you know, mariculture is different than the fisheries I've been involved in. You know, as a fisherman, I'm used to, you know, getting my harvest and getting a paycheck pretty much right then. And with farming and with mariculture, it's a longer-term sort of project. You obviously sometimes don't realize the income for a while.
Thank you. If you could sum your testimony up, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, and that's all. I'm just saying, I'll just ask them to support House Bill 76, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I'm sure.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for testifying, ma'am. We certainly enjoy public testimony. Do you represent an association or an organization?
Yeah, I represent. I'm the board president for Ocean Alaska, so we're a nonprofit shellfish hatchery and marine science center in Ketchikan.
Do you, if I may, Madam Chair, follow?
Follow up.
Thank you. Do you, if this bill passes, do you plan on applying for a loan, and if so, how much?
If this bill passes, yes, we do plan on applying for a loan, probably about $200,000.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Seeing none, I will go to the Cordova LIO, John Kaiser.
Yes, my name is John Kaiser. I am the owner of a small farm, Rocky Bay Oysters. Madam Chair Stutes and House Committee members, the only things I need to say are that we as farmers do need seed. We need sources, reliable sources of seed. And we encourage, I would like to see that the ones that will produce the seed specifically for the mariculture are able to get a line of funding. However, in the past, as with a lot of public funds, I've seen a lot of waste, and I think we need to make sure that the loans are performance-based. Oceans Alaska has got a good track so far of being performance-based, but other people may not have, and I'd just like to make sure that we, as if we approve this, that it is a performance-based on quantities or types or whatever their goal may be when they set up and ask for the loan. That's all I have.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll state again, you know, I like the concept of this. My concern is, and directly, I think we were talking to Mr. Sir, you said you had a small oyster operation that you're trying to get going yourself?
Right. Yes, the chair. I have a small operation. No, I've been on an operation for 8 years. However, I've been working with a friend in Cordova for the past 3 years in order to grow the seed that we need, because there was such a shortage.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A follow-up, please.
Follow-up, Representative Newman.
Thank you, and I think the intent is to try and help small organizations like this do this. My concern is, and maybe this gentleman can help me with this, if he has a concern with it or not, the balance of the fund can only appropriate out 40%, so $2 million of the five. And there's already $500,000 out, which leaves $1.5 million left. Do you have a concern that larger organizations may absorb the rest of what the fund balance is. If there's only $1.5 million left, if we have a larger organizations that apply for these, because it's basically free money for 6 to 11 years, is that going to affect a small operator like you not being able to get? Do you have concerns that you may not be able to apply for this because there's no fund balance available?
Through the chair, good question. The fund, it was a good idea to begin with, but in all honesty, there were not that many farmers that were able to take advantage of it initially because of the requirements for collateral and all. And most of the farmers, or some of the farmers I know, and myself included, have actually taken small farm loans out with the FSA. This is a larger pot of money. If it were to be used correctly by even larger entities, I would have no problem with that because there are, as I said, the smaller farmers are very seldom able to access it as under the present rules. So if this would provide the seed for the mariculture industry, even to Oceans Alaska or someone that needed more than $200,000, I would not see a problem myself with it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Seeing no other questions, we will go to King Cove. Eric Wyatt.
Yes, hello.
Hello, we can hear you. If you'd state your name and affiliation, please, for the record.
Yes, this is Eric Wyatt, the Blue Star Oyster Company. I run an oyster farm and a nursery. I supply seed that I get from the hatchery, grow it to a larger size for farmers, and sell it on. My business has been growing over the last several years, but the sourcing the seed is always the issue. And being able to have part of the loan fund be accessible by a hatchery as a loan gives the potential for us to have Alaskan spawned and, I say, more secure seed that's going to benefit the industry. Also, the hatcheries will have other possible species, such as kelp, or actually there's a variety of potentials. And if they're operating, then it opens the door for those to happen. So I'm speaking on behalf of 76. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And I see no one else online, but we do have here Angela Drobinka from APICTA.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angel Drobinka, and I represent the Community Development Quota Organization, the Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association, also known as APICTA. I'm also a member of the Mariculture Task Force and the chair for the Investment and Infrastructure Advisory Committee. The committee has recognized that modifications to the fund would be very helpful in fully supporting the mariculture industry. APICTA is one of six CDQ groups in the program, and we represent six communities in the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands. We've been in existence for 25 years, and we've worked in partnership during this time with our communities to create stable fisheries-based economies by investing in things such as inshore processing plants, local community infrastructure, quota and vessel purchases, workforce development, and scholarship programs. We appreciate the opportunity to comment today, and I'll try to be very brief. We support the committee substitute for HB 76, and we do so from a rural community development perspective. Our communities are heavily invested in fisheries, and we have a strong interest in mariculture development and believe that it could play an important role in diversifying our existing seafood operations and supporting our community's local economies. The CDQ program was created out of a recognition that there was very limited economic opportunities in Western Alaska, and the coastal community should have a stake in the fisheries in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands. The portfolio of these groups are very diverse. For those communities invested in shoreside processing plants, one of the challenges that we face is the unpredictable and unstable nature of fisheries. as well as the seasonal nature. So we've recognized that some of the most stable communities have year-round processing plants that provide consistent tax revenue and job opportunities. We believe that mariculture could play a significant role in creating the stability in fisheries-dependent communities. This bill is very important in making sure that funding to fully support the infrastructure needed to advance a healthy mariculture industry exists. Finding funding for hatcheries, as you've heard, has been challenging, and seed production is essential to making sure that there are successful farming operations. We believe that in order to have a full, successful industry, we need to close this funding gap. There's no fiscal note attached to this bill, and it would more fully utilize and work in existing loan fund that's been dedicated to the mariculture, dedicating to support the mariculture industry. We believe that it's timely and necessary and would urge you to forward it through your committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. Now, the type of hatchery that you're talking about where you could achieve the seed production that's necessary, how much does it cost to get that type of operation going?
Through the chair, Ms. Representative Eastman, I can't answer that question. I suppose it depends on the size and the scope of the operation, and that would vary greatly depending on the objectives. But I think you've heard from other testifiers that they're interested in taking out loans for $200,000, so that would be appropriate for that size of operation, and that the limitations under the bill are $1 million. So I'm assuming stakeholders have identified that as an appropriate amount.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could speak to the amount available in the fund. I'm mostly alluding to the previous question, the answer from the previous, I believe it was Eric Wyatt, and how much is available in the fund right now for disbursement.
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, I believe that there's about $4.5 million available from the fund right now.
Follow up.
Specifically,
Representative Newman was asking about how $1.5 million is effectively available. Could you speak to that, and if that sort of speaks to the fiscal reality of what is available in the fund right now for loans?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, could you provide some clarification to your question?
Representative, we might ask Ms. Cheon Haywood to come up, and she might be a better individual to respond to that question.
Okay, thanks.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Ms. Cheon Haywood? I'm not getting the first part of your name right.
You don't get to have a last name like that.
Thank you.
For the record, Brittany Choney Haywood, Director for the Division of Economic Development. Could I have a repeat of the question, please?
Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you. I wanted to confirm Representative Newman's analysis and his question of Mr. Wyatt that while there's $4.5 million presently available in the fund, that in effect, because a certain amount has to stay in the fund, that really there's only, I believe what was asked to Mr. Wyatt was 1.5 to 2 million effectively available. And I wanted you to speak to that or confirm that analysis.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins. So currently there is the approximate $4.5 million that's remaining in the fund. We have just under 500,000 that's been loaned out. That balance is available for lending outside of a small foreclosure reserve that we use in case something does happen to not end up paying back. So we try to make sure that, however, that the loans are collateralized appropriately so that we don't have that risk. So there is, I think if you took out the $2 million in potential hatchery loans, there would be just probably approximately $2 million, little over, maybe $2.2 million, to be available to loan out to other entities.
Are there further questions from this committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm kind of just going back to page 5 in the top paragraph, or I guess section 10. Total balances outstanding on loans made to borrowers under Alaska statute may not exceed 40% of the principal. And if the principal was $5 million, there's already $500,000 out. 40% of $500,000 or $5 million is $2.5 million. Or $2 million. And if there's already $1.5 million out, that would leave one in a balance of $1.5 million available, I believe.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I do see your point. So my understanding was it was going to be up to 40% of the fund or $2 million to the hatchery loans, but I might need to speak to the sponsor or the sponsor staffer on clarification on that.
I think we found a hiccup.
Ms. Bulling?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was correct.
Which is correct? Which statement are you referring to when you say that is correct?
If I could, I'd like to ask Ms. Decker to return, and maybe she can provide the reasoning.
Okay. Ms. Decker, please come up, state your name and affiliation for the record. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Generally, when these funds are created, there's a statement on how the fund is operated, how it should be balanced and run. Do we, maybe for clarification on this, do we have a copy of that, the original charter that they should be following on these, or maybe that might help clarify this question?
We do not.
It seems to be unknown at this point.
Ms. Decker, can you address Representative Newman's prior question?
Yes, through the chair. Representative Newman, the 40% in that section you were talking about, we did intend it to be of the total $5 million principal, original principal, so it would be up to $2 million available for these types of new applicants. Is that clarified?
That's, Madam Chair, if I may.
Follow up, Representative Newman.
Madam Chair, that's fine, but we're hearing now from somebody who wants to apply for a loan on what the bill is supposed to mean. That's what... You know, and that gives me a little consternation there. Generally, you know, that should be, I don't think it's very clear in the bill, and we should probably have some clarification, but I you know, when somebody who wants to be a loan applicant is asking the director on how the loan works and answering questions to the committee on how the loan's going to work, I know that's their intent as somebody who's a recipient of one of these, but probably not appropriate on that. I understand their intent of what they'd like to see, but that's not what the bill says.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking here in Section 3 at the difference between mariculture business and hatchery, and I'm just wondering, could hatchery be considered a mariculture business, or are those mutually exclusive terms?
Ms. Decker?
Through the chair, thank you. Representative Eastman, I think the key term is business, like a for-profit business. The hatcheries and the shellfish enhancement entities would be nonprofits. I believe that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Bensler, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, and perhaps this is more responsive to Representative Newman, I tend to agree that I would prefer to see clearer language in Section 10, Part E. If it's intended to be $2 million, it seems that we should just have the language say may not exceed $2 million of the $2 million. If it's intended to be 40% of the current principal at the time of the application, then I feel like that language should be in there, so we don't have this kind of issue. I think that would perhaps be clear, and we could go for there. So, I mean, I would be certainly willing to offer up a friendly amendment if that was what the bill sponsor was interested in, or working with the bill sponsor to determine truly what the intent is there and going forward. Of course, referring to the bill sponsor's very capable staffer, Ms. Bowling, so I don't know if you can speak on behalf of Representative Ortiz or not.
Elizabeth Bowling, staff to Representative Ortiz, through the chair, Representative Fansler. The sponsor would be amenable to that idea.
Representative Fansler, you're certainly welcome to offer up a friendly amendment. However, I am going to hold this bill.
Okay, then I will work.
For further discussion, it might make it just a little easier on the sponsor as well. So I am going to, is there further testimony from anyone here? Mr. McCune.
My name is Jerry McCune. I represent the United Fishermen of Alaska. I don't have a whole lot to add to the conversation. You pretty well had a long conversation. But I do think there's tremendous opportunity in this field, mariculture, and if we can move forward. I remember when we started the hatchery, salmon hatcheries, there was a lot of conversation to that. But it's been a big success, and they've paid back a lot of their loans, a lot of these different hatcheries. And I had my doubts when I was a kid about the whole program, but it's been a success. So I think as you move forward here, I think this is going to provide a lot of opportunity for people that have boats and opportunity to get out there and get this field going. And around the world, it seems to be taking off, especially in kelp, is a big opportunity right now. And there's been a lot of advances in that and jobs. So work through the bill, and I think that we can come out with a good product and provide a lot of opportunity for Alaskans to start this field going. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Mr. McCune. Are there questions for Mr. McCune? Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony, and we will be setting this bill aside until a future date. And I will take a brief at ease. We are coming back on record, and we will be hearing House Bill 128, Shellfish Enhancement Projects. And due to a time situation, we are going to first hear a brief description of the bill, then we are going to do our public testimony, and then we will hear a sectional, just for the information of the committee and for the convenience of people that are here. So, would the sponsor please place himself on the record and begin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dan Ortiz, Representative Dan Ortiz from District 36. And with me is Mary Hakala, who is a staffer who will help further explain this bill. And she will put her name on the record as well.
Mary Hakala, staff to represent Dan Ortiz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 128. House Bill 128 is another step in the puzzle of trying to promote a mariculture industry here in Alaska. The market for Alaskan seafood products and the market for mariculture products coming from the mariculture industry is a strong market. The demand for products from Alaska is ever increasing from year to year to year. Particularly in the mariculture industry, the demand largely comes from Asia. The population of Asia is not going to go down. It's projected to increase. There will be a consistent and strong demand for products, mariculture products, coming from the state of Alaska. There's just no question about that. What we need to do in the state is put the infrastructure in place, put the pieces together so that we're ready to meet that demand. And again,
this would be a step in diversifying our economy, which is something that's critical for the state as it moves forward into the future. Specifically, Madam Chair, House Bill 128 creates an exciting opportunity to diversify Alaska's fisheries portfolio and to move the mariculture industry forward here in Alaska. In brief, HB 128 allows qualified nonprofits to pursue enhancement and/or restoration projects involving shellfish species, including red and blue king crab, sea cucumber, abalone, geoduck, and razor clams. There may well be other shellfish species of interest in the future, perhaps Dungeness crab, urchins, limpets, or species currently of little interest. The market and biology will dictate which species hold economic promise and financial viability. Here are the nuts and bolts of HB 128. Creates a regulatory framework with which the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will be authorized to manage shellfish and enhance projects. And enhancement projects. The bill outlines criteria for issuance of permits. It sets out stringent safety standards to ensure sustainability and health of existing natural stocks. A determination of substantial public interest must be made before a project can proceed. It's important to note that the shellfish produced under enhancement permit become a common property resource when returned to the wild. The bill, Madam Chair, provides for cost recovery and designed harvest areas under guidelines established by the department. In addition, the bill sets the application fee for a shellfish enhancement project at $1,000 and amends the application fee for a salmon hatchery permit, increasing the fee from $100 to $1,000. And those would be for new hatcheries that may or may not come online. As we look to the future and the potential of increasing ocean acidification, shellfish enhancement projects may well play an important role in ensuring viable, sustainable stocks by nurturing them during their larval stages when they are most vulnerable to the effects of acidification. In summary, Madam Chair, the shellfish enhancement projects hold promise in diversifying and expanding portfolios in local fisheries and increasing the resilience of Alaska's fisheries portfolio. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to allow us to hear from the people who want to testify on behalf of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. And as I stated earlier, we are going to go from Representative Ortiz's explanation of the bill to our public testimony. So I'm going to open public testimony, and the first individual I'm going to ask is Forrest Bowers, who happens to be on the phone, and I know that he's attending meetings, and so I want to get him in. Mr. Bowers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't have any prepared remarks. At this point, I was mostly online to answer technical questions that might come up. I did want to just clarify some of the things that Representative Ortiz said. I think that there is a distinction between mariculture projects and shellfish fishery enhancement projects. When we talk about shellfish fishery enhancement, we're talking about wild stock enhancement for common property fisheries, and that's distinct from what we traditionally term mariculture projects that are, would be related to our existing shellfish farm program. So I just wanted to make sure that distinction was clear to folks. There certainly is some overlap in parts of this, but there is a distinction. And so that's all I had right now. I'll be online to answer questions as they come up.
Thank you, Forrest. Are there currently any questions for Representative Christ-Tompkins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bowers, could you speak to some of the, genetic dynamics of shellfish enhancement? And there's obviously a lot of consideration with the genetics of the enhancement of wild stocks of finfish and particularly salmon. How does that translate to shellfish, if at all? And what is the department's sort of perspective on managing those dynamics?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Christ-Tompkins. So the department has a policy, a genetics policy that relates to fishery enhancement. And, the central tenet of that is that we select stocks, candidate stocks for enhancement, you know, from the local area where they're going to be released. And we, you know, part of that would require, you know, for shellfish, it would require, you know, baseline work to understand what wild stock population dynamics and genetic structure. It also requires an understanding of, you know, reproductive biology of shellfish are broadcast spawners, meaning that their larvae are, you know, often undergo a planktonic stage where they're up and dripping in the water column before they settle out on the substrate. And so we would look at larval drift zones and what is the potential range of drift for those larvae. You know, that would be a consideration in designing and permitting an enhancement program. So there certainly are genetic concerns that we address through our policy and our permitting process.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bowers, and thank you for standing by. You have a question for Forrest Bowers?
I do, actually. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair.
Representative Fentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Bowers, one question I did have, and this is kind of a little bit tangential, but I think very important for me to understand, is last week we heard a bill that was proposed, HB 107, and that was about what was entitled fish enhancements in streams, and essentially it was a harvesting of the fish and when they hatches fry, returning them to the same stream. And one of the folks that spoke from the department said, well, they didn't view that as enhancement at all. They viewed that more as rehabilitation. And I was wondering if there was a strict definition that the department uses for what's an enhancement and what's a rehabilitation. I think it's important that we have continuity across all of our different, you know, kind of bills that are coming forth and recognizing that. And
thank you. Through the chair, Representative Stansler. That's a good question. You know, a lot of terms, enhancement, rehabilitation, are discussed, and sometimes they're used seemingly interchangeably. When we talk about rehabilitation, we think about rebuilding a wild stock to its natural reproductive potential. So bringing it up to a level where you know, it would naturally sustain a certain amount of harvest or yield. Enhancement is taking a stock, perhaps that's already relatively healthy, and enhancing its production beyond what it's already doing in the wild to provide additional harvest opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bowers. I will now, if there are no further questions for Mr. Bowers, I will move to testimony in-house, which we will first go to Heather McCarty. If you would come forward, state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, Ginny Eckert and I are going to be up here together. We're the co-chairs of the Alaska King Crab Research Rehabilitation and Biology Program, otherwise known as ACRAB, and we thought it might be best if we testify together. Is that
certainly, if you both put yourself on the record, and then please identify yourself before each of you speak.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. I'm Heather McCarty, and I work for Central Bering Sea Fishermen's Association, otherwise known as CBSFA, which is one of the six community development quota program groups. We represent the island of St. Paul. We are actually the smallest CDQ program in western Alaska. The mission of the CDQ program, as you heard from one of the previous testifiers today, is economic development in coastal communities in western Alaska, particularly fisheries-related development. As such, CBSFA holds a considerable amount of quota in the federal crab program in the Bering Sea, and also has been involved in the ACRAB program since its inception in 2006. The ACRAB program, which is a research and rehabilitation program, has been involved specifically in the rehabilitation of Red King Crab in the Gulf of Alaska and Pribilof Island Blue King Crab in the Bering Sea. Up until now, the program has depended on hatchery production of juvenile crab that are produced under a research permit. As of right now, there is no other kind of permit that the hatchery can use to produce larger amounts of juvenile king crab for use in enhancing these stocks, which are currently down very, very far from what they were many years ago and haven't been fished in 20, 25 years. My colleague is going to describe that situation a little bit more thoroughly. We will need House Bill 128 in order to make the next step in our mission, which is to rehabilitate these stocks of king crab. Without this, we don't have any place else to go, so we're really up against that wall and need this legislation in order for the Department of Fish and Game to establish regulations that allow for shellfish hatcheries. They just don't exist right now. I'll pass it over to Dr. Eckert.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Ginny Eckert. I'm a fisheries professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I'm also the associate director of Alaska Sea Grant. And as Heather mentioned, I also serve as the co-chair of and the science director of the Alaska King Crab Research, Rehabilitation, and Biology Program. So I've been in the state since 2000 and have been working on king crab rehabilitation since 2007. I want to thank Representative Ortiz and the legislature for their work on this bill. The bill will provide opportunities for restoration, and I wanted to address the need for that here, specifically with regards to king crab. So king crab is native to Alaska, and many of the king crab stocks crashed in the early 1980s, and they haven't recovered since. So this is a period that's approaching 40 years. Overfishing is likely the cause of the decline. The fishing rates were really high in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. There was bycatch and trawl fisheries, including foreign fleets, which up until the 70s were allowed to fish in Alaskan waters. So in the past 10 years, we've been conducting research on the feasibility of rehabilitation. We've learned a lot about king crab biology. Much of this is important and has been informing fisheries management as well. We've been identifying critical bottlenecks in the life history, and one thing that's really important is identifying whether hatchery production could, in fact, help restore the natural population. So I do believe that there is a potential here. There is a potential for success. I do want to address one question that came up from Representative Christ Tompkins regarding genetics. And I would say that shellfish and salmon are quite different genetically. The salmon hatcheries are functionally domesticating the salmon because the parents are reproducing and their offspring are returning. And so you have that closed loop. With king crab in particular, the crabs are reproducing in the wild, so there's natural selection there, there's mate selection, there's opportunities to adapt to natural environments, which is an important feature in trying to restore wild populations. With that, I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. I was wondering if either of you could speak to sort of case studies that have been particularly successful with shellfish enhancement in other parts of the world.
This is Ginny Eckert, so I'll address that question. One big success story is with European lobsters in Norway, and there are healthy fisheries that are produced. Their management is very, very different. People can own the sea bottom in Norway, so it's a very different structure. But in that situation, it's a very successful program.
Follow up.
Representative.
And any examples of success specific to a species of king crab?
Through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, there have been programs on king crab. The Japanese originally developed the methods to culture. They've developed much of the aquaculture industry worldwide.
But to my knowledge, they don't have any active programs at this time. There is an example from Russia. I'm not sure that. So the Russians introduced king crab to the Barents Sea, where they weren't native, and they did that successfully. And so there is now a vibrant fishery in the Barents Sea, fished by Norway and Russia. And so it's not a restoration project. They intentionally did it to increase their fisheries.
Follow up, Representative Chris Tompkins.
Fascinating. So it would seem actually that maybe the Barents Sea is in fact a really successful case study. I mean, it's not restoration or enhancement because there was no native stocks, but it was the successful propagation of the species to create a commercially viable fishery, it sounds. And to circle back to the genetics question, is it fair to say in either of your from either of your perspective that, I mean, while there's a lot of caution and conservatism from ADF&G with fisheries enhancement with salmon, which I appreciate, and I also appreciate the enhancement, I just, you know, we want to do it right, and Alaska seemingly has done it right. Are there any sort of biological or scientific or genetic concerns, and maybe especially from your perspective, Ms. Eckert, with shellfish enhancement, in particular king crab enhancement, that we, the committee, should be aware of?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, I mean, any time there are, you know, activities, you would want to take into account the genetics. And currently there are efforts to increase the genetic diversity of the pool of animals that are reared in the hatchery, and that's something that's incredibly important and essential, and Fish and Game regulates that right now. That's something that should be considered. The other thing that's in the bill is that the adults would be taken, the so to speak, parent stock, the brood stock, would be taken from the area to which they are native, so as to not disrupt any of the local genetics. So I believe both of those efforts are really important and are in place in the current bill.
Madam Chair, may I speak to that as well?
Please, identify yourself.
This is Heather McCarty. I wanted to reassure Representative Chris Tompkins that in the course of the ACRA project so far, we have been working really closely with the Department of Fish and Game on the genetics issue. And not only that, but some of the research that we've conducted with graduate students and professors at the University of Alaska have been specifically on the genetics of blue king crab in the Bering Sea in order to determine exactly what the range of that species is and how related they are in different areas of the Bering Sea. We've made that a whole section of our research program.
A comment?
Comment, Representative Chris Tompkins.
This is really, really helpful, and I want to note, I think it's just a really sort of positive statement, the partnership that exists between the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, I guess is maybe the new title, and those involved in this collaborative, as well as ADF&G, and I think that speaks to a lot of the baseline diligence getting done, and I like the sounds of this bill.
Thank you. I think that's a really a good addition and a good comment. Thank you, Representative Chris Tompkins. Are there any questions? Seeing none, we thank you, ladies, for your testimony.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, this is Heather McCarty. I have a letter of support here from the ACRAB Steering Committee, signed by all the members of the Steering Committee.
Wonderful.
I can submit it later.
If you provide that to my committee aide, Reed Harris, here, he will make sure all the committee members have a copy of that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here in the room that would like to testify to this? Please come forward.
Hello, Representative Chair Stutz. My name is Julie Decker, and again, I'm with the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. I just wanted to support this as sort of a package of some regulatory and further alignment that will allow the mariculture industry to develop in the future. These kinds of activities, again, to be clear, cannot happen right now. So this is absolutely necessary in order to move forward with shellfish enhancement. My organization is the client which means we facilitate the seafood sustainability certification by third-party groups of the state of Alaska's salmon fishery. And it gives us kind of a unique perspective because these outside industry experts come to the state and actually review fish and game management policies against sort of international sustainability criteria. And the salmon enhancement program is absolutely a very large part of their review. They spend about a week a year in the state going over, you know, updated information and current policies and procedures. They look at region by region. They particularly actually interview the managers of the salmon hatcheries, particularly the larger ones. And they sort of hold up fish and game and their policies to a precautionary approach, and they measure them against that. And we have received just recently, in the last month, a recertification for in the next 5 years under the Responsible Fisheries Management Program. So fish and game will continue to have those kinds of stringent requirements and policies, particularly with genetics diversification and this issue of taking parent stocks from local areas and bringing them back to that same local area. So we feel very confident that we'll be able to maintain that kind of sustainability certification into the future.
Thank you kindly. Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Christ-Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Ms. Decker. Say this bill passes. Could you speak to where you think there might be the most sort of prospective shellfish enhancement activity in Alaska and with what species?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, the two groups that are the sort of furthest along in the research side of shellfish enhancement are the ACRAB group with king crab and then the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association with sea cucumbers. That's primarily the two groups that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, thank you for your testimony, Ms. Decker. And for the sake of time, I am going to go to the LIOs and the OFNET, and I'm going to ask them to all limit their testimony to 2 minutes, please. So we will first go to Nancy Hillstrand in Homer.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you. If you'd okay. State your name and affiliation for the record.
Yeah, my name is Nancy Hillstrand. I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. We've been in the fisheries for 53 years, and I've worked in rehabilitation with the salmon hatcheries and rehabilitation in a lot of habitat also. The problem that I'm seeing with this bill is I think it doesn't talk about magnitude. It doesn't give you, like we, Fansler asked for a definition of enhancement and rehabilitation. I agree with that wholeheartedly, but also in magnitude. Because enhancement, like, is it 300,000? Is it a million? Is it 500 million? Look what happened to our pink salmon hatcheries. The original intent of the bill of the Hatchery Act in 1974 was that they shall not have adverse effects on natural stocks of fish. Well, here in Lower Cook Inlet, we're getting 87% strays over here into our Lower Cook Inlet streams from Prince William Sound. So is that causing an adverse effect? We're, you know, we've seen different things happening. For instance, right now they want to put a pen configuration on a area that has three different cataloged salmon streams. And I just think that's an adverse effect also. And so I think we need to get this, not just say that we're doing it, but we need to prove that we're not adversely affecting natural stocks of fish. With this particular bill, if ACRAB needs a little more to get their experimental projects off the ground, then maybe that should be directed, you know, look at that, but not just open it up to wholesale, letting anyone take these fisheries and run with them. So I'm concerned also about the cost recovery because we've also, some of these nonprofits have taken up to 83% of the fish, which means 17% left for the fishermen. So it hasn't worked out as well as we think. It sounds good, but maybe we need to look at all the different things that we've, that we're doing because I don't think there's enough monitoring. I do believe there would be a huge fiscal payment needed by Fish and Game to do this properly. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Questions for Ms. Hillstrand? Seeing none, we're going to move on to Tomi Marsh in Ketchikan.
Yeah, good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tony Marsh, and I reside in Ketchikan. I've been involved in the commercial fishing industry for over 35 years, and I'm the president of Oceans Alaska, which is a nonprofit shellfish hatchery located in Ketchikan. Oceans Alaska supports House Bill 128, as it will help diversify economic development and increase environmental stewardship, because it will help enhance traditional and economically important commercially harvested shellfish species, you know, such as sea cucumbers and gooey ducks, which have been impacted by sea otter predation. It will help enhance other shellfish species that are integral to marine ecosystems and habitat restoration, and also for our fisheries. And also it will help the shellfish species and aquatic plants that are vital to climate change and pollution mitigation, as shellfish and these plants are the cleaners of the oceans and they can uptake nutrients and carbon excesses. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And we will go to John Kaiser in Cordova.
Madam Chair Stutz and House Committee members, my name is John Kaiser. I am the owner of Rocky Bay Oysters in Southeast Alaska. My only comments are, even on my small farm, I've seen changes in the last 8 years that were not expected, and we will be having a lot of changes here, and it will start affecting our wild stocks. I applaud efforts like AtCrab in their restoration, and I think that we, the state, should be behind that. So I'm in favor of this bill. The only concern I have is that, unlike in the salmon programs, we don't have salmon farmers in the state. We will, in mariculture, have mariculture farmers. And we just need to make sure that the things like cost recovery operations and all would not be in conflict with the individual farming businesses. And we can do that simply by regulating the species that are allowed to be grown on farms versus restored. Other than that, I have nothing. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Kaiser? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kaiser. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? If you'd step forward and state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Milo Adkison. I'm a professor of fisheries at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I looked at the legislation. It looks like it's has a real strong focus on maintaining oversight and protection of wild stocks. I'd like to encourage you to reinforce that and ask that Fish and Game also take that portion of the legislation very seriously. I wanted to reiterate what Forrest Bowers said about there's a difference between enhancement and mariculture, and I'm most concerned about enhancement. I think Representative Tompkins, Chris Tompkins, expressed some concern about effects of hatchery-reared animals on wild stocks. That's a valid concern. You have the potential for competition. You have the potential for genetic damage to wild stocks due to interbreeding of the hatchery-reared fish and the wild-reared fish. And you also have a fisheries effect where you have hatchery-reared fish, which are mixed in with wild fish that can't really sustain much of a harvest. And unless you can separate those two, you're going to over-harvest the wild stocks. We are fortunate in our salmon hatchery program that salmon have this ability to home. It means that we can release them in remote locations. We can minimize their interbreeding with wild fish because they home to these remote locations. And we can also harvest them at higher rates than we harvest the wild fish because they're spatially segregated. And with a lot of enhancement programs for other species, you won't have that homing ability. You will tend to have hatchery and wild animals interbreeding, and you will tend to have harvests on a mixed stock of hatchery and wild fish, and that makes the potential for damage higher. So I would encourage you to encourage Fish and Game to have strong oversight over permitting any enhancement programs.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And do we have any questions from this committee? Seeing none, we appreciate it. So we will ask Ms. Hakala to come back, and if you could briefly go over the sectional, and then we will set this bill aside. But we want to get this. Oh, let me close public testimony, please. Seeing no other to testify, I'll close public testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Mary Hakala, staff to represent Ortiz. Section 1 of the bill provides the Alaska State Board of Fisheries authority to direct the department to manage production of enhanced shellfish stocks beyond rootstock needs for cost recovery harvest. Section 2 increases the permit for salmon hatcheries from $100 to $1,000. Section 3, and that's where there's a lot of meat in terms of the, it adds a new chapter entitled Shellfish Stock Enhancement Projects. It provides direction to the commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game on issuance of permits for the private nonprofit enhancement projects, establishes a $1,000 permit fee. This section directs the commissioner to consult with technical experts in the relevant areas before permit issuance. It provides for a hearing prior to issuance of a permit and describes certain permit terms, including cost recovery fisheries, harvest sale, and release of enhancement project-produced shellfish, and selection of broodstock resources. This section describes reporting requirements and terms for modification or revocation of a permit. It specifies that shellfish produced under an approved enhancement project are a common property resource with provision for special harvest areas by the permit holders. Section 4 provides Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission authority to issue special harvest area entry permits to holders of the private nonprofit shellfish rehabilitation or enhancement project permits. Section 5 defines legal fishing gear. Section 6 exempts shellfish raised in a private nonprofit shellfish project from the farm fish definition. Section 7 and 8 establish state corporate income tax exemption for a nonprofit corporation holding a shellfish fishery enhancement permit. Section 9 exempts shellfish harvested under a special harvest area entry permit from seafood development taxes. Section 10 establishes an effective date for the salmon hatchery permit application fee that was raised to that $1,000 level. Section 11 authorizes the Department of Fish and Game to adopt implementing regulations. Section 12 establishes an immediate effective date for Section 11. Section 13 establishes an effective date for Section 8 concomitant with Section 2, Chapter 55 SLA 2013. I might note for the record as well, there are two fiscal notes, each of which are zero. One is from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and the other is from Commercial Fisheries Division. And I might point out that in the permit section, in Section 3, it's explicitly stated in Section E, the commissioner may not issue a permit under this section unless the commissioner determines that the action would result in substantial public benefits and would not jeopardize natural stocks. And then subsequently, there is another section in the alteration, suspension, or revocation of permits that if the commissioner should find that the permitted activity is not in the best interest of the public, say if there was problems found, the commissioner may alter the conditions, they may revoke the permit. So I think it is clear that the bill provides teeth to the Department of Fish and Game to set standards and hold the new permittees accountable.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. And due to the time restraints that we have here, we will hold this bill until a later date. And seeing no further business to come before this committee, we will adjourn at 12:03.